speaking the word. Say, I deserve.
I deserve.
Yes, you do. Yes, we do. Because Carlos is right here with us. We deserve Carlos. Carlos Wayne Anderson, come speak the truth.
Thank you, my beautiful brother. Hallelujah, my beautiful brother. Thank you.
I love you.
Well, I must say that when Britt was just announcing the names of some people who are part of the spiritual community here and have been for years, who have taken their last breath in this incarnation and returned back to the light, it just made me really get again and again, each time someone makes their transition, I really get how brief this little trek is that we're taking, how brief it is. And I've spoken before many times about the idea that God is in charge of when I was born, and God, the universe, is in charge of when I'll take my last breath, but that I must remember that I'm in charge of everything that happens in between. That poem that went around a few years ago called The Dash was a poem that reminded many of us that on our tombstone, or on, in my family, it's an urn, but on that urn, it has marked on it the same thing that tombstones have or gravestones have, and it has a person's name, and then it has their date of birth, and then it has their date of death. And in between those two things, it has a dash. So this poem that went around years ago was to remind us all that we're just here for a little dash. And for some people born into the world, that little dash is actually only a matter of moments, a minute or two. And for many of us, it's, you know, longer than that. I know that I have facilitated the going home services for hundreds and hundreds of people in the years of my ministry. And the surprising thing to me has been that the majority of the people whose services I was facilitating for their home going were people who were younger than myself. And I can remember thinking, oh my God, they didn't even get to be here to experience as many days of living life on this plane in this incarnation as I've been blessed with. I also know that I have spoken to people in nursing homes and in hospices who were preparing to take their last breath, who were in their 90s, and I know that they looked into my eyes, many of them with tears in their eyes, and some of them with quivering lips, as they said, it just hasn't been long enough. I wish I had more time. I've never been in a nursing home or a hospice house where anyone has looked into my eyes with tears and trembling lips and said, I wish I had more stuff. Never. Not once. It's, I wish I had more time. And upon some gentle inquiry about what would you do with that more time, many of them are willing to confess the clarity that came at the end, which is, I wish I had more time to love. And I wish I had more time to feel loved, independent of what people outside me were doing, thinking, saying, or providing. I just wish I had more time to feel what I have to feel right now as I'm in the process of taking my final breath, which is that I am not held by the world, nor the people in the world, that I am held by my Creator, that the love that I'm experiencing right now is the love that I wish I had tapped into more often. I've had people in their 90s with tearing eyes and trembling lips say to me, I just didn't take advantage of so many opportunities to drop the rock, just to let go of my issues with other people, my issues with myself, my issues with life itself, and my issues with God, for creating a life that I thought was completely unfair. And now at the end, I'm getting a clarity about my role in things, that it was my responsibility not to look for life to be fair, but to accept life for what it is, and to open my heart and to open my mind to the inflow and the outpour of the Spirit called holy, because those are the only moments in my life, as I reflect back, where I have truly felt the presence of God. It was never about what anyone else was doing. It was always about me. It was always about my willingness to remember and to understand the gift of life, the gift of being here and breathing and walking through the processes of life and the experiences of life, all of the circumstances of life. I wish that I had had the willingness to be able to walk through a valley with joy in my heart instead of pretending that the only places that were worthy of my opening up and letting my joy through were my mountaintop experiences. I wish I had gotten then what I have so clear now, that all of it, the whole picture of life, with all of its hills, all of its valleys, all of its stories of the thrill of victory and its stories of the agony of defeat, are so precious. They are the pearl of great price. To just accept that your life is outstanding, and as the song reminded us, to accept our role in knowing what we deserve and creating what we deserve instead of waiting for the fairy godmother to come along or Prince Charming to come along and kiss us awake. I wish I had awakened myself and made it my business to stay awake. We are only here for a dash. If someone in their 90s could say, it seems like it went by just like that, then I at 65 want to remind myself that I may not be here tomorrow. I may not be here this evening. My next moment, the next moment, the next day, the next hour is promised to no one. And I think that although death in my belief system is not a reality, it sure looks and feels real. What is the purpose of it looking so real and feeling so real? I think that the purpose and the function of life being designated in incarnational segments where it appears like you're born and then later it appears like you die is so that we will just be awake to having authority in the dash, that we would be responsible in the dash, and that we would be conscious in the dash, and that we would not waste our minds in the dash by arguing with what is, by pretending to be the victims of anything or anyone while we're in the dash, that we would stand up in our power and that we would live each day as though it truly might be our last opportunity to be all the love that we can be, to shine it out on everyone, and to do what we have been instructed by rabbis of old to do, which is to seek to see the face of God in everything. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam. The Lord our God is alive in everything. The Lord our God, the presence of the Infinite One, the Creator of all that is, all of the love there is available, and it is our job to seek it and to find it and to say, I see you. Many times the face of God is hiding. It hides in the people you have judged against. It hides in the groups of people you have judged against. It hides in some dire circumstances and some challenges that you face. And in those moments, when you fail to see God, you truly believe that God is absent, although such a thing can never be possible. God is infiltrating every nook and cranny of everything and everyone in this entire universe. We have been instructed that God is love. And so when we do not pay attention to God and are not under the influence of the Creator, we are not under the influence of love. A Course in Miracles poses a very interesting question to its readers. It says, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Let me tell you one thing that I've noticed about me and others. In all of the Unity churches I have ever been in every Pentecostal church, any Catholic church, any synagogue, any ashram, any temple, any mosque I've ever visited, that they are all built around principles of universal love. And yet the people, including me, in many of my phases, have not been people who were about universal love. We just weren't. We were people that had a vested interest, and as I said a couple of months ago, in our own little private groups, a vested interest in our own families, our own church community, our own people, our own culture, our own religion, our own race. We want to be right about the fact that I'm right and they're wrong, that I got the right path and they are being in a state of wandering out there. We want to be right about the fact that the five principles of unity, or the four at least, before that last one, which just tells you to act on it, many times we want to be right about the fact that the unity principles are not true. I have been in so many unity churches where we are in the energy of them being true while we're at church, and then out to brunch after church, you would have thought we had never encountered a single one of those principles ever in life. I have seen people hug each other up in unity and practically spit bullets at the server who forgot they asked for no ice in their water at brunch less than 40 minutes after hugging everybody up at unity. I've seen many people read what our brother Britt just had us read about this being something that we want to unleash into the world. We want to unleash something wonderful on the world. We want to release the love of Christ. We want to see each other with the eyes of Christ. We want to think with the mind of Christ. And we can read those things and see those things, and we can hold our breath, and we can get into a yoga posture while we're doing it, and we can take three deep cleansing breaths, all of this preceded by a wonderful holistic meal with friends, and we cannot take any of it in if we don't allow for it. What do I mean about we want to be right about the fact that the unity principles are not correct, that they are not true? In other words, we want to be able to believe. I still have stuck in my brain the old, the original, when I first found my way to unity. It was over 40 years ago, and the five principles have gone through many different manifestations and changes, trying to simplify things. But my brain always holds the less simple things that originally came from Charles and Merle Fillmore. So when I think of the first principle, I think of it being spoken in the words in which I encountered it, which is there is only one presence and one power in the universe and in my life, God the good. Well, when we're not speaking that in church, if we look at ourselves throughout the week, we are about something completely different. We are not even about wanting, really, it does not appear to me, wanting to believe that there is only one presence and one power in the universe and in my life, and that's God the good. We want to believe that that is one presence in my life. I will acknowledge that one of the presences in my life is God the good, omnipotent. But I have an issue with the word omnipotent, because omnipotent means all-powerful. And I must tell you that I recognize other powers walking to and fro upon this earth, seeking whom they may devour. There are other powers. There are powers that I have no authority over, that are out of my hands. I live in a world where the most powerful person is the person presiding over the nation in which I live. I understand that the most powerful groups of people are the groups of people who have it all. They are the one percenters. They are a power that is disconnected from me. And then many of us believe that God is a power also, but that God's power is disconnected from me. Do you want to be right? Or do you want to be happy? It's very, very true with many, many, many people that you made a decision when you were a child about the way life works. You made a decision as a child of who you are, what was your place in life, and what life was all about. Many of you came to a conclusion in your early childhood programming that life is not fair. Many of you came to a conclusion that there is just not enough in life. Some of us, people with my color skin, grew up being programmed into the belief system that this world is particularly unfair for us. We must work and demonstrate at twice the level of white-skinned people in order to simply be recognized. I was programmed to believe that God was a jealous God and an angry God, that the doorway to heaven was a very narrow one, and few are they who will enter. I talked to you once about green marbles and red marbles. Some of what I just told you, those are red marbles, and those red marbles have taken up residence in my belief system. Not were they passing thoughts that came through my mind. They were thoughts that I pulled down into my heart and I resonated with. So if as a child I came to believe that the world was a hard place and an unfair place, and that I had to work really, really hard just to even be noticed or to be in any way applauded. If I came up with ideas, I know my sisters told me that by the time they were 8 or 9 years old, they were effectively programmed into the belief system that boys are no good and that men are not to be trusted. Even in grade school sometime, all the little girls would be smiling when we did the poem, "What are little girls made of? Made of? What are little girls made of?" Then they told all this sweet stuff, all this sweet stuff that little girls are made of. And they were over there smiling. And then they sat down and we stood up. "But what are little boys made of? Made of? What are little boys made of?" And then there was all this icky stuff that followed. And the girls smiled even bigger. And the boys got rough looks on their face. "Well, if that's what I'm made of, then I'm going to act like it, doggone it." We have such programming that it's all about separation. Remember that in the Genesis experience, at first we were simply eating of the tree of life. The tree of life is direct feeding from God. We understand that I'm a part of the garden. I'm not someone in the garden. This is all one thing. And the one thing and the one oneness that I'm experiencing is the oneness of God. As long as they ate from the fruit of the tree of life, they understood that they were a part of God, the Creator, and a part of all of creation. In that frame of mind, which we, all of us, are heading back to, and that we will arrive at because it is our destiny, in that frame of mind, that God is all there is, I am safe and sound, and the appearance of death itself does not rock my boat, because the Eternal One is not only my Creator, but is an essential part of who I am. If you're not eating from the tree of life, as we read in Genesis, you're eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's the world we live in right now, and that's the manifest reality for most divine beings who are playing the game at being human. That there is good and that there is evil. And even though Christianity and Islam and Judaism refer to themselves as monotheistic pathways, the one God pathway, if you listen to the people that come out of all three of those paths, you will become so clear that the idea that there is one God is not truly believed by the children of Abraham, and it is not practiced by the children of Abraham. Because we have eaten from the tree of good and evil. And if there is good and evil, I want to be good, and I want to identify the evil. Dualism takes place. So we believe in God and not God. And even though not God is not real, we feel as though not God can be more real than God, God. We must get to a point where we return home to knowing of our inseparable oneness with the source itself. We have a tendency, regardless of what spiritual path we're in, and regardless of how new agey it is or new thoughty it is, we have a tendency to believe that we are not one with our Creator, that there is a disconnect. So in all the pathways, we see people trying to figure it out, trying to do the right thing, wanting to return home, not knowing that it was impossible that they ever left in the first place. We forget that the essence of who we are really is God. You know, I have to believe that my daddy was my daddy. I have his nose. I have his hands. I have his eyes. I have his voice. But I just have to trust that he's my daddy. Mama could have hooked up with somebody that had that same nose, them same hands, and them same eyes. I just have to believe that was my daddy. But I'll tell you one thing that wasn't available when I was coming up, but it is available now. And that's a process by which they are able to see beyond the outer appearance, where they are able to see beyond what the nose and the eyes and the hands look like. They are able to see in what sometimes appears to be the invisible realm. And from this information that they could draw from my father's blood and from his DNA, they could tell me, "Fret not, that's your daddy, or your mama lied." It appears as though my father and I are two different beings. That was my dad, and I'm Carlos. But if you look into my DNA and my blood, you will find that my dad is still alive and well and living in me. My dad not only gave me life, but continues to be a living presence in my life. So I think about my Heavenly Father, the Creator. And I think that many times I want God to be with me, God to bless me, God to shine on me, God to heal me. And sometimes I'm reaching for an outer God that I'm asking to come in to my location and my situation and bless me there. And all God can do is patiently await for me to awaken to the truth that I can never be outside God. Although I can't see it with the naked physical eye, with the right instrument, and in this case, that right instrument is the vision of Christ that is our true vision. With the right instrument, I can see that my very essence is of God. I don't need to call God in. I can't be anywhere that God is not. That's why it's such a beautiful thing to personalize the prayer for protection and to know that the power of God protects me because it can't help itself, because I am that power. And my job is to take authority of that power. If I don't stand up and be all of me, I'm going to want somebody else to. If I don't be the love I need in my life, because this title is Love is the Answer, and I'm identifying love with the spirit energy of God. If I don't identify that all of the love I've ever wanted, I am, that is my essence. If I have the instrument of the eye of Christ to see, I will be able to see that my essence is of God. If I use that same vision to gaze upon you, I cannot help but know that you are God. And if all is God, then doggone it, I can relax.
I can relax. But if all is not God, if there is not God walking like a lion to and fro upon the earth, seeking whom it may devour, I can never relax. I got to stay on guard. I got to be on protection. I have to shield myself. I have to act tough like the little boys in the sixth grade when we heard what little boys were made of. I can't be authentically me, which is a demonstration of love. You know, I said I don't know how many months ago here, there was a big thing going around for a long time, what would Jesus do? We had all these people trying to do what Jesus would do and falling flat on their butts while trying to do it. You realize it's because you can't do what he would do, because what he did came out of who he said he was, who he believed he was. That rascal actually believed God was his father, his source. He actually believed that even with the political situation of Jerusalem looking like it did, with Herod in office, with Pilate on the scene, with the Romans occupying their land, he had the nerve to truly believe that none of the drama and psychodrama and melodrama going on around him could affect his holy state of safety. He truly believed that anything that was in the world of appearance was not at cause. That who or what was at cause is an invisible spirit that is who you really are. It's the Christ of you. I heard it said that regardless of how much anyone weighs at the moment before they take their last breath, you can put a 400 and some pounder on the scale. You can put somebody 165 pounds. You can put someone 32, 40 pounds on there. That when you weigh them after the breath of life leaves their body, that the weight, whether they were 400, 300, 200, 100, or less than 100, that the weight that they are is the essence of the spirit that has left them, like 42 grams. And I saw a movie once that said 42 grams is the weight of a hummingbird, and that's how much the real you weighs, regardless of the size or the weight of the body that you inhabit. Your spirit is that 42 grams is your spirit, 42 grams. That's how much less bodies weigh once the spirit has left them. To understand who you really are, you must remind yourself you're not a human being and that you're not a body. And you must remind yourself that if God is love and that you have been created in the image and after the likeness of love, you can only be truly happy and truly safe when you're being who you are, when you're not carrying around a fake ID, which many of us do. And many of us, our main fake ID that we love to pull out is that I am a fractured being. And if anybody asks, how did you get fractured? We will say, do you have time to sit down? Because this is going to take a while. And we will take them through the first time somebody broke our heart in the first grade, until the divorce we had last week. We will take them through not having enough to eat when we were a child, or not being understood when we were a child, or what it was like to be a gay child in the neighborhood and in the system that I was in. We'll take them through the whole thing of why we're fractured. And when we pretend fractured being, then we must acknowledge that the five principles of unity are nothing. Either they are true, or we're right. Do you want to be right? Or do you want to be happy? Happiness involves being love. And love is a thing that if you are it, it automatically shines on everyone. Not just your little self-interest group. That's the thing. I just love my people so much. Oh, I love my people.
every time one of my people gets shot, I just can't barely think straight for a week or two. And I walked up to people and says, what are you so depressed about? Didn't you hear? Another one of our people got shot. Oh, yeah, I read that right under the article about the 8 Syrian children who were killed. Are you hurting for them? Oh, I didn't even notice that. Because it's not your self-interest group. If we just love people who love us, it's not love. It's fondness for our self-interest group. I get to be right that there are a group of people who are worthy of my love, but that's not being love. Not at all. I know many people with pets. How many people with pets in here? See, I love New York. Almost everybody's got a pet. I'm in Massachusetts and I have pets too. But I've had people say, I only truly, in all my life, have truly experienced love from my dog. The only time I've truly felt unconditional love is with my cats. And I've sat there thinking, on my notice of you in your life, the only thing you truly love is your dog or your cats. It's a feedback system. You bought them on purpose. You knew you would buy food for them. You knew you would keep them safe. You knew you would get them to a vet. So your pets, you see, as part of you. They're yours. But your neighbor? Pfft, no way. No way. We're playing the game of I'm me and you're not. Jesus did not play that game. He didn't play that game with God, which we play. We play that game with God. I'm me and you're not. And we certainly play that game with other people. Not our unity community, of course. Other people. I'm me and you're not. Dualism. God and not God. That's not love. When you're being love, you can be a hardcore black man who, yes, loves his people, and you can read an article about a little Appalachian boy with blonde hair and blue eyes and red freckles, whose dad has lost his life in a mine, and you, big, black, rough man, will cry like a baby. That's when you'll know you are love. Not just when your people get dead. We will know we're love when all of humanity becomes a vested interest for us. We will cry with the Native Americans. We will cry with the Tibetans. We will pray that God blesses everybody, and we will quit the silly game of throwing rocks at other people and pretending we are fractured. And if y'all get y'all's act together, I can relax. No. I deserve to relax, as the song said, right now. And the only one who is authorized for me to relax is me. God is the author of life itself. God has authorized you to author your life experience. You're writing the story of your life, and only you are writing it. You know, if other people could give you what you want, I think some of them would. I've seen people marry people all through the romance, all through the going together, all through the engagement. She just provides everything I've ever wanted. 3 months after the marriage, I'm as empty as I ever was, even more so. Of course, even more so, because you thought you had found someone to fill the emptiness, the void inside you. And try as they might, they just couldn't.
and your need became a repellent. Loving people draws them in. Needing them scares the pants off of them. People go from what they think is love to what reveals itself to be need, and they wonder why the person they informed they needed jetted out of town as fast as they could, changed their email and their cell phone, and made it impossible for you ever to reach them again, impressing them with how much you need them. If you're not being love, this is the kind of stuff you do. If you're not being love, you're disconnected from your source. Your source is God. I just want to remind us that we are part of God. God is not a separate thing. We are part of God. God is part of us, the real part of us, the essential nature of us. When I speak that line, I usually do, and I say, holy is your name. Name is the metaphysical meaning, interpretation of the word name is nature. Your very nature is love. And so I encourage you to be love. And I will end with that thing I do give, because I like to be reminded of it myself. God is in heaven. Heaven is in you. Holy is your name. God wants you to know you have nothing to fear, and that there is nothing and no one to blame. You've been informed. Your captivity is over. You've been informed. In truth, you're free. And so it is.
Peace!
Thank you, Carlos. Speak the truth. Will you turn to a neighbor and say, I'm me, and so are you.
Love of God. As I sit and breathe gently and deeply in a way that works for me right here and right now, I bring to mind the truth that I am one with the Creator and all of creation, and that it is my good pleasure to extend the love that I am and that is the love of God in all directions to everyone, to everything. A scripture once reminded me that if I say I love God and withhold love from any of my sisters or brothers, then I'm not a truth teller. Because God is love. And to love love is to be love. What would I feel like if I simply chose to be the presence of love itself? How would that inform my life? Would I have more clarity of mind? More peace in my heart? More joy and prosperity? More gratitude? Would I be less anxious? Would I be more at peace? Would I relax?
what would my life look like if I knew there was only God and no, not God? That all there was me, appearing as the many, me as God, in different forms, God giving God to God, love giving love to love, life giving life to life. Oh, how sweet and perfect it is for us to dwell together in the spirit of unity. I am oneself, united with my Creator, at one with every aspect of creation, and I am limitless in power, and I am limitless in peace. I return home to love right here, right now. Its residence is in my heart. I breathe gently and deeply in a way that works for me right here and right now. I enter into the altar of the Most High within my heart. To be love. Silently experience your oneness. And now gently return yourself to this space, this sanctuary, this temple. Be here now. Whisper, please, these words. I've been informed. My captivity is over. I've been informed. In truth, I'm free. And so it is.